Hello and welcome to Outside In, the podcast for people who'd rather be outside, but for one reason or another, are inside. I'm John Burns, and I'll be talking today about Mark Horrell's book, Seven Steps to Everest. Before I do that, I'd say this isolation business, well, it's fair flying by, isn't it? Well, I feel as though I've only been inside for, two or three months, really. No, one of the advantages of isolation, one of the few advantages, is that, you can spend the whole day in your pyjamas, which I think is pretty good, really. I'm an author, of course, which means one of the few occupations that you can actually do whilst wearing your pyjamas. There's no need to get dressed at all. There is one other occupation I can think of where wearing night attire is an advantage. But I'll let you work out which one that is. I have been out today. I did have to get dressed and go out. I went out shopping, I went out on my bike. You see, what I thought I'd do, very clever, you know, I'll combine my exercise with my shopping. It's a good idea, isn't it? But I decided that, you know, I'd wear my face mask, my medical face mask, which is really, I find very handy. It's really good for getting you served quick in the post office, you know. And I was fine, but I'd had tried to cycle with it on before. And when you start to puff uphill, it's quite hard to breathe. It was like being at altitude. You know, it felt like I was at about, 20,000 feet. So there was a lot of wheezing and puffing going on. And talking about wheezing and puffing, I'm sure one bloke who's not a stranger to that exercise is Mark Horrell, who wrote his book. It's about Seven Steps to Climbing Everest. It's a really insightful little book, a very funny book, and also a very honest book, really. And I liked it because we tend to read a lot about the elites of mountaineering, you know, people who can push the limits of things. But the great thing about this is really Mark Horrell's book is an account about how someone who wasn't a master mountaineer, who hadn't dedicated his life to the whole sport, managed to make it to the top of Everest. A really fascinating little account. So, without further ado, here is my little sample of Seven Steps to Everest. The route was a series of ledges, barely big enough for a boot, some horizontal and others sloping at an angle of 30 to 40 degrees. A light dusting of snow glazed their surface, and half a dozen strands of old rope from previous years lay at ground level for me to snag my crampons on if I lost concentration for a single moment. We were just below the ridge. A wall of rock provided security to my left, but I could safely say that the 2,400-metre drop to my right was the biggest, most unimaginable void I had ever seen. Ahead of me, the second step loomed like a three-headed beast guarding the gates of hell. Well, okay, maybe not, but you get the idea. Suddenly, a light bulb fizzed into life inside my brain, and letters of flashing red neon appeared in the sky above me. "What in the name of Satan's dumplings are you doing here?" they read. It wasn't the last time the thought would cross my mind that day, though maybe not in quite the same words. I had no logical answer, so continued onwards in a state of disbelief. For 5 weeks I had stared up at the summit ridge, a distant skyline I could scarcely comprehend reaching. And now I was here, a yak's bellow short of the stratosphere, and only vaguely capable of appreciating it. Until that moment, the darkness had kept reality at bay. Now, the dawn brought a measure of understanding. But only just. It still felt like a dream. I started mumbling the mantra that kept me going throughout my summit day, and maybe, just maybe, saved my life. Must get down safely. Must get down safely. The other climbers were much quicker than me through that section, and by the time I reached the sanctuary of the second step, I looked up and saw no one. Behind me, Mark and Ian were catching up, accompanied by their Sherpas, Angaloo, and Carmi. I was relieved to reach the ledges of the second step, which felt safer than those sloping slabs. Its lower section involved climbing a short ladder into a small alcove. To its right was a large, diagonally sloping boulder with a crack broad enough for a boot down its left side. Several ropes, old and new, ran down the crack in a tangle of nylon. The boulder itself was several feet high, with very few cracks for crampons. Somehow, I had to get my right leg on top of it and then haul myself up using the ropes. I couldn't ignore the sickening 2,400-meter drop down the north face that I knew was waiting for me at the top of the boulder. And this knowledge shredded my confidence. I tried 3 times, but I knew I wasn't trying hard enough. I was a long way outside my comfort zone, and the mantra kept returning. Was I up to this climb, or had I overreached myself? Chomba had joined me at the alcove, and I turned to him.
I don't think I can do it, Chomba. I'm sorry. He looked very sad, but before we could think about our predicament, Angelou joined us and took control.
Mark was standing at the bottom of the ladder waiting to come up, and there wasn't a space in the alcove for any more of us. Turning round was no longer an option.
Okay, I climb up the rock and pull you up, Angelou said.
I watched him effortlessly complete the manoeuvre I had tried in vain, and then turn around to proffer his hand. Before I knew it, I had joined him on the rock. The die was now cast. Chongba joined me, and we continued onwards. After a short step onto another rock, which led towards the ridge, we climbed an easy snow ramp, angled 10 meters up to a ladder. This was the second step's most famous feature, left by a Chinese team in 1975. It was about 5 meters high, and to its left was a broad vertical crack which the climbers Conrad Anker and Leo Holding free-climbed in 2007, hoping to understand whether George Mallory could have done so in 1924. When the Chinese and Tibetan quartet of Wang Fu Chu, Chu Yin Hao, Lin Lin Man, and Kong Bu climbed this feature in 1960, it took them 3 hours. Louis made 4 attempts to free climb it, but kept falling. Chu took off his boots and socks to have a go, but also fell. They eventually got up when Louis used his expertise as a fireman, crouching down to let his teammates stand on his shoulders and then hoiking them up as he stood. The effort exhausted him so much that he couldn't go on, but his 3 companions continued to the summit and made the first acknowledged ascent of Everest from the north side. Their achievement was greeted with scepticism in the West when it was first announced, mainly because of the ludicrous communist propaganda in their account. It is now generally accepted by all but a handful of doubters, who wouldn't be convinced if a bust of Chairman Mao was discovered on the summit and carbon dated. The Englishman, Leo Holding, graded the top section of the second step an HVS, or hard very severe, which means extremely hard in plain English. He believed it was highly unlikely Mallory had climbed it. But you don't need to be much of a climber to use the shoulder method employed by Louis, which was common in the 1920s. The American Anker rated it 5.10, which is a climbing grade and not its height in feet and inches. At that moment, I could have LOL'd at these abbreviations. There was a ladder. And I was fine with ladders. Within moments, I climbed a feature they had spent 3 hours struggling with in 1960. Was I cheating? I didn't care. After another 2 meters of scrambling through a tangle of old ropes, I was standing on top of Everest's most feared summit day feature.
Well, that was an extract from Mark Horrell's book, 7 Steps to Everest. I've been speaking to Mark, and I've managed to persuade him to come onto my podcast. And he's going to talk, next time he comes on, we're going to talk about his one of his other books. He's written quite a prolific author. He's written Feet and Wheels to Chimborazo. I think that's how you pronounce it. And it's about a major cycling feat that he carried off. Well, okay, I hope you've enjoyed today's little podcast, and I'll be dreaming something up to tickle the airways tomorrow. Hope to see you then. Bye-bye.